We have an opportunity to spend some time with my warm, close, personal friend, prolific author, author of such magnificent works as Lost Rights, Freedom in Chains, and, of course, the latest blockbuster, which is now available in paperback, Attention Deficit Democracy. Some of you were lucky enough to actually win copies of that. You may recall in the famous quote game. Ladies and gentlemen, James Bovard. How you doing, Jim?
Hey, Brian. Thanks for having me on.
Jim is calling us right now from an undisclosed location just out of gun range of the downtown D.C. streets.
Guns aren't what they used to be down there. Well,
so much for the big guns. Of course, we've been all yapping about Scott Brown and all the rest of that, all day, and I thought maybe we'd take an opportunity here to look at some things that haven't bubbled up on the radar yet, but could certainly provide some interesting conversation and reflection on the weasels we have there in the logic-free zone. A couple of articles, actually three here, that I picked up on that I thought maybe I'd run by you. First of all, in the WAPO, I guess it was yesterday the 19th, John Solomon Carrie Johnson's article, FBI broke law for years in phone record searches. And when I read that, I thought of you and the conversations that we had back in the day when the Patriot Act first blossomed on the scene, and how you were the first to point out how this thing was fraught with opportunities for mangling the privacy and individual rights of American citizens.
Well, yeah, and unfortunately, I haven't been disappointed on that. it's interesting. The Inspector General issued a report on this today and talked about some of the methods that the FBI has been using to get people's private phone records. And, you know, I mean, people might assume, well, you know, if the FBI wants to know who you've been calling, you have to get a search warrant. Well, no, it turns out that the FBI was using Post-it notes.
Oh, how high-tech of them.
Post-it notes. I guess the thing that happened is that an FBI agent would just kind of stop by the phone company. Oh, here's a Post-it note. Hey, I'd like to have Bob Jones' phone records. Yeah, sure, okay, you know. And there was one FBI agent said it was like having an ATM machine. Just push the button and you get people's private records. This is so completely illegal and unconstitutional. It was striking in the Washington Post article yesterday, which looked like it could have been written by the FBI. I mean, it was curious because there were thousands of FBI crimes, but no FBI criminals.
Yeah, I was just looking at one of the early paragraphs, quoting the general counsel, Valerie Caproni, that we should have stopped those requests from being made that way. They were a good-hearted but not well-thought-out solution.
Isn't that a great phrase? You know, I think back to the 1780s when Americans were talking about the Constitution and there was arguments about the Bill of Rights, Fourth Amendment prohibits unreasonable searches. It prohibits most searches without a search warrant. There is no asterisk except when the government claims they're good-hearted.
Exactly. I couldn't find that in my copy either. I thought maybe an earlier version had been smuggled through there somehow.
Actually, I think that's the later version. I think that's the new version.
Is that the living version? That must be the living
version. Yeah, living version, yeah. It's the kind of version which makes people squeal.
Well, the thing that's so incredible to me, Jim, is, these chickens coming home to roost to trot out that oft-used cliche, is the failure of government agencies that are put in place and funded with huge taxpayer dollars to take care of things that go bump in the night, or things that go bang on an Army base, Fort Hood, and the fact that we had some guy named Hassan that was sending, he might as well have been wearing a sandwich board saying, "Hi, I'm an Islamic terrorist cleverly disguised as an Army officer. Stand back while I shoot somebody." The TSA and all the jillions of dollars spent on security equipment by the government, not the airline so much, and yet we still have the tidy whitey bomber and all the rest. So when we find out that the FBI is running around willy nilly, dropping off Post-it notes to get phone records and so on in blatant violation of the rules, then you got to wonder, kind of like Samuel Francis said, are we finally arrived at a narco tyranny?
Well, Sam Francis raised some great questions. The interesting thing here is that there's probably going to be almost no backlash on this. So there's a few Democrats kind of making very critical comments. Senator Leahy's good on this issue, on this FBI crime wave. And yet, it's been obvious for years. There were earlier reports that showed this was going on. This is the most detailed report, but this is not breaking, you know, the basic crime itself is old news. And yet, nothing's going to happen on this. At worst, you know, the FBI chief is going to hold a press conference and assure us that there's going to be a new ethics training program for FBI agents.
Heads will roll, Jim.
You know, but part of the frustration here is the FBI is admitting that thousands of people's phone records have been accessed on this illegally, and we have no idea whose rights were violated. It might have been you. It might have been me. It might be some of the people listening to your program right now or out in your listening area. We have no idea, and the government's not going to tell us.
Well, I think the kicker came, but I want to get onto these other stories too, but I think the kicker came towards the end when it was reported by the two guys who wrote the article that it all came to light when the editors at two newspapers were contacted in August of 2008, and Mueller, the FBI guy, apologized for the breach of these reporters' phone records. I don't remember there being blaring headlines on that one.
The thing that happened, there was a very minor, like an asterisk notice, I think. This is a situation in which the FBI had illegally accessed, the emails of reporters for the Washington Post and New York Times,
mm-hmm.
which, I mean, if this had happened under Nixon's reign, it would have been front page, blaring headlines day after day. Congress would have been investigated. Heads might have rolled, maybe not. But still, it would have been a major issue. But here you have the FBI illegally going after the New York Times, Washington Post reporters' emails, and nothing happens.
That's
about a chilling effect.
Mm. Well, that may be, I think, probably back in the day that wouldn't have happened because Bill Bradley was good-hearted.
Well, I don't know. I mean, I think of J. Edgar Hoover, and good-hearted isn't usually the...
No, he was... J. Edgar Hoover was well-dressed.
He certainly had a much broader wardrobe than what I have.
Very diversified, I think, is the term.
Yes. And I hope a lot broader than yours.
Well, I don't know. I understand at a party, you invite J. Edgar, he come over stronger than a wagon load of wet goats. You know,
well, there you go. Thank God for your classic phrase.
You can't leave home without it. Hey, I wanted to ask you about this other one I read about this board of governors. Are you familiar with that? This executive order that the president signed. Council of Governors. It's supposed to be create a working relationship between the feds and the state governments to protect us all from bad breath and harm and all types of hazards, potholes, swine flu, a terrorist invasion. It's really kind of a the way I read it. It raises a lot of flags about an opportunity for the Posse Comitatus Act to be circumvented.
Okay, I had not heard about this, but there's been a lot of gutting of the Posse Comitatus Act over the last 25 years. It was shot to pieces in 2006, but it got put back a little bit after that. But no, I hadn't heard about this. What's the scoop?
Well, that's pretty much it. There was an executive order. I was just looking for the number on it here. I think it was pretty much. It was in there. I can fax this over to you or email this over to you. But essentially, what happens is the whole idea is that it's supposed to be this bipartisan thing, comprised of 10 governors from various states who'll be selected, of course, by the president to serve these 2-year terms, and they're basically going to sit there and work on with this whole laundry list of people: Secretary of Defense, Homeland Security, NORCOM, blah blah blah. They're going to have exercises and do all this wonderful stuff in order to provide for the national defense, but it's also going to incorporate the armed forces from Canada to be commingled with armed forces in the United States, and therein lies that Posse Comitatus thing that people are worried about. I cannot find the number, but there is a link at the White House .gov 2010 Executive Order PDF. I'll send this whole article over to you. It's pretty, it's interesting. I don't know that it's anything to run out and, you know, start losing fingernails over, but nevertheless. And then there was a third thing that Scott Horton put together. And in fact, I think I picked this up of a link off of the Jim Bovard blog, which is just rife with all sorts of neat things to look at. That apparently these Guantanamo suicides that we heard about a while back maybe weren't so suicidal after all. And some of the skullduggery and nastiness that was rumored to be going on down there really did.
Yeah, Scott Horton, a lawyer up in New York who's done some of the best work in the torture scandal, worked with NBC News, I think, and put together an expose. It looks like there were three detainees at Guantanamo who were killed during interrogations, and the Pentagon decided to cover up and claim that they were suicides. And the Pentagon, one of the top guys there, said that the detainees had engaged in asymmetrical warfare against the U.S. when they committed suicide. It now looks like, it's not for sure, it looks like that's a complete fraud, and it looks like the Pentagon created this elaborate, completely fabricated cover-up. And, you know, there's a lot of people who are going to instinctively say, well, you know, that's hard to believe. Think of what happened with Pat Tillman. Think of what happened to the number one poster boy who was joined the U.S. military after 9/11. He was killed by fellow U.S. troops. The Pentagon lied up and down. The Bush White House was almost certainly involved. The guy who's the commander in Afghanistan was at the heart of this. And, you know, there were so many falsehoods and so many deceits that the Pentagon used to try to make paint Pat Tillman as a hero who'd been killed by the Taliban.
Well, he was, he was certainly a sympathetic figure. He was a big
Absolutely.
Football guy
Absolutely.
And all the rest. And
Very
then it was
impressive guy.
Yeah, and then after the fact, when the thing was kind of fading off the radar, and so then there's that little squib at the bottom, say, I'm sorry, we have that's not the way it happened after all.
Well, and this is something that the Pentagon, that the U.S. military knew within hours after Tillman had been killed, and it's not entirely. You know, let's just say there are still questions about his death. Let's just put it like that.
Mm-hmm.
There was such a concerted cover-up going to the high levels of the Pentagon and to the White House, because George Bush used Tillman's death, almost as a way to cap his speech to the White House Correspondents Association a couple of days after Tillman had been killed. And people were trying to alert the White House, or maybe did alert the White House. Some of the emails vanished or been withheld. That you have to be careful how you talk about this, because let's just say there's some things about the death that let's just keep it vague. And go ahead.
Well, no, I just find it interesting that and what people tend to miss out on this is we focus down so narrowly when we're especially in our business when we critique and criticize, that lose sight of the fact that this is not unique to any one administration, that the
Absolutely.
The screw ups that have been monumental over the past 12 months, the hubris, the condescension, the violations of constitutional principles and restrictions and so on, that neither side of the aisle owns the market on that.
Well, I mean, it's frustrating, because this is the third president in a row that acts like he's above the law explicitly, and yet people seem to learn little from the Clinton administration abuses. Most people seem to have not learned much from the George Bush administration's abuses, and yet people still have this faith in politicians as a class.
Well, and I would suggest, if you're building your library, there are three books that are come to mind that'll teach you some remarkable things. Feeling Your Pain, about the Clinton-Gore years. Then there was the Bush Betrayal. That concerned itself with so many of those, and then Attention Deficit Democracy. You get that those three books, all by the way, by Jim Bovard, and you'll have yourself one hell of an education on this business of lost rights, of freedom and chains, the building blocks that follow the chain of the work that Jim has done, and one of the reasons I've been a big fan for all these years. I'm wondering, just to tie this thing off on this Guantanamo thing, Jim, is do you get the sense that Scott's piece is going to come to a head? It would seem to me that all things considered, there are folks in the mainstream media be all over this like white on rice.
If they had gumption, if they had courage, I mean, that's the underlying farce of the entire torture scandal. So much of the best writing has been done by people who are not in the mainstream media. people like Mark Danner out in California, or New York Review of Books. I haven't seen much pickup on the Scott Horton story yet. Hopefully there's going to be more pickup on that, because the issues he raises go to the heart of what the Pentagon is doing, and it raises questions about the deference to the Pentagon by any president.
Well, I know that when these things do bubble up, I appreciate the fact that I can grab the telephonic instrument and get you on the show here, and we can have a reasonably sensible discussion of the facts and get them out there for people to check out for their very own personal selves.
Well, it's always fun to raise hell with you.
I'll be in D.C. in a few weeks for the CPAC convention down there at the new, I think it's at the new Marriott. They moved the location, but we need to get together. We'll blow the foam off of something.
That sounds good. I'd enjoy a few beers, and you know, perhaps you could finally teach me something about wine.
Not a chance. I'll talk to you later, Jim.
Right.
Thanks a lot.
Hey, thanks a lot, Brian.
Always a pleasure. Jim Bovard, the author of Attention Deficit Democracy and a bunch of other great books. Well, there's a little smattering of some of the things that aren't on the aren't going to be on the evening news this evening, but certainly are things that are should be of concern to people who have a concern about the preservation of a free society, or, dare I say, the restoration of a free society.